I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to Old New Borough Blue, a Blue Room podcast about some of the things we like about Everton as opposed to post-match, which is usually the things we don't like about Everton. I am made up this week to be joined for Series 2, Episode 2 by Rob Vera, transatlantic podcaster and musical oracle. I think it's fair to say, Rob, how are you?
I'm manless. I'm great. I don't know that I've ever had such a beautiful introduction before. Love that. Yeah, I'm doing well. It's Sunday morning still over here, and just trying to, recover from the evening, recover from yesterday's game a little bit.
Yeah, I think we all are a bit, aren't we? It was, I think we just before we started recording, we said, you've taken a bit of a mental break from Everton in terms of podcasting and talking about them a lot. So yesterday, we'll talk about Everton a little bit to start before we kick off.
Sure.
What did you think about that yesterday then?
Well, it's funny. Yesterday happened to be one of the days where I found myself tweeting during the game, which I've done far less of this year. Less the season. I mean, I think part of the idea was that I would by taking a break from podcasting, that would kind of naturally reduce my inclination to talk about the game while it was going on. But I don't know, yesterday seemed like one of those ones where it started a certain way, and it just, you know, I found myself kind of weighing in and thinking about it. But not, yeah, it's frustrating. I think that we all sort of are kind of locked right now into this weird purgatory, if you will, for the club. Like, you know, don't know who owns us, have no money to spend, don't know how many points we have, don't know if we're gonna be okay or if we're not. I remember when we got the deduction, we were playing so well, it's, you know, not only going into that but a little bit after that, that a lot of us, including myself, were like, you know, take the 10 points, we won't get relegated anyway. And now, of course, we find ourselves in the midst of the longest winless drought since 1994, yep. A year that lives in quite a bit of infamy with many of us. And so I'm a little worried. I'm a little anxious, but I will say that, I've been so jazzed to get on with you, Les, just because, you guys know this, that most of the fun I derive from doing podcasts with you guys is just because you're my friends and I just love shooting the shit. But I have not missed talking about this season every week that much. Doesn't mean that I won't want to do it next season, but I've really enjoyed the break from it. And I've needed that to get back to, I don't know if I'm in a healthy place with Everton, Les, but I'm, let me put it this way. It's, I think that sometimes when you love something, and I think this is true of a lot of our fan base, that you can love something that doesn't love you back. And in fact, is just a constant source of negativity. And after a while, it just can become really toxic. And I know that some of you guys have the ability to just power through that and just live in that bleakness all the time. And I think that I just had to admit at a certain point that I just couldn't. And so I needed a little break. It's been nice, but glad to be on talking with you today.
Yeah, it's not been the best season to be talking about Everton. I mean, we're used to talking about crap football, but everything's been punctuated by like solicitors, points deductions, legal cases, and it's just dead boring. So we'll move on from that and talk about some good stuff. So before we kick off with your choices for this week's Old New Borough Blue, can you tell me what was the first game you remember and what was the first game that you went to?
Okay, so first game I went to is easy because you never forget that, and you certainly don't forget it when you're an American like me who has to kind of make a whole trip out of it. But first one I can remember is a little tough, because when I started following Everton was in that magical 2004-2005 Cinderella Champions League run. I've told the story before, but I like to joke that was when Everton really bamboozled me, because I thought at the time, wow, I became addicted to it like a hard drug, and I thought, God, it's gonna always be like this, isn't it? And I never realized it's sort of like a band that you love a band who their first album ends up being their very best album, you know, fairly or not. It just sometimes that's just the way it is. And I don't know. I mean, for me, that's the highest finish. It was in year one of me following Everton. It's now been, next season I'll be going into my 20th year of following and supporting Everton. So when I started, it was a lot of really dodgy internet streams, mostly audio only, believe it or not, over here. We had Fox Sports World, which was essentially a channel that on Saturdays and Sundays would show one game each. It seemed like it was always Manchester United or Arsenal. it seemed maybe with some Chelsea mix, you know, thrown in the mix there. And occasionally I get Everton. But I will tell you that in 2004-05, the games that really, stuck out to me, obviously, were, to me, the one that I always point to is the first game that I remember watching. And I know I was watching it on my computer in a really bad stream, but also that really, that's when I knew Everton had me, was Big Dunk's header to win 1-0 against United at Goodison. The Arteta, you know, free kick, and the pandemonium. I can't describe to you what that moment was like in terms of suddenly realizing that, oh shit, I'm really sucked into this, and I don't think that I can get away from it now. And that's how I felt. It was quite a thing. And other moment, obviously I had lots of other good moments of the years. My first game that I actually went to, I know, Les, you know, this one was New Year's Day 2017? I can't remember. Whenever Allardyce was in charge, and it was Manchester United at home, or it was at Goodison. United won 2-0. Pogba absolutely dominated us that day. We had a weird lineup. Actually, that was my first game at Goodison. My actual first game was away at Bournemouth. Sorry, I always forget that. Because Idrissa Gueye scored in that game, but we lost 2-1. And I remember when Rooney played in that game. We also had this weird, it was very Allardycean, like three defensive midfielders. Like McCarthy hadn't played in months, and he brought him right back into the first team that game. And I can't remember who else he was paired with in that game, but the football was predictably bad, and yet I didn't care. I was at Bournemouth where, you know, of course, I don't know that we've ever won a game. You can tell me that statistically we've won a game at Bournemouth. I know we won a cup game there with Joel Robles, but it's one of those places.
Twice we drew, leading 2-0 after 75 minutes and then got beat. I can't think of a time when we've won down there.
Yeah, well, and before anyone jumps on me, I know we've won away at Bournemouth. I'm just saying it's one of those places that feels like you've never won there.
Yeah.
It's sort of like in basketball, there's some player on the opposing team who you could swear has never missed a shot against you. Like, that's how I feel about that den of evil down on the South Coast. But it was still such a cool experience to be in the way in. And then a couple days later was at Goodison. So saw two losses with my first two Everton games. Ever since then, undefeated, only wins every time I've watched Everton live. So clearly I'm going to have to – I'm planning to be back this season for the home game to Burnley, the Dyche Derby. And hopefully they've won a game by then, Les, because this is getting a little alarming right now.
Yeah, I think we might need a bit of your magic at that game, but by then it could be too late.
Yeah, clearly.
I do like the idea as well that Everton have been like on the difficult second album for the last 19 years, basically.
Yeah.
I do like the idea of that.
It does feel that way sometimes, but I it doesn't mean that I haven't had some great memories and great times with Everton over the years, but I, like many others, did not realize at the time how good it was under Moyes for a lot of those years. But yeah, all of that's contextual, of course. There's no way we could have known how much not only Mashiri would change things for the worse, but how the league would, you know, there were always haves and have nots in the league, but it's somehow gotten even more the, you know, they always talk about whenever you're talking about politics and you talk, you know, there's always the arguments made about income inequality and the gap between the rich and poor, and those things are real. And it feels like that gap's just only widened ever since I started supporting Everton, to where now it used to be like, wow, we got into Champions League, or we're fighting for Champions League, to now then it was, well, let's just get into Europe. And now it's just, can we get back to a place where we just stay in the league? Or don't have to worry about staying in the league. And it just feels like that bar gets lower and lower and lower. And I don't know if that means that it's destined to always continue to go lower, but we just keep feeling like I can't believe we're here again, because after the first escape with Lampard, I thought we just needed to get through that season and then we'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then last season, we just need to get through the season and it'll be okay. And yet, here we are again. And I could not have picked I could not have picked a better season to take a little time off from talking Everton every week.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong at all there. Right, let's dig into this then. And we'll talk about some happier times under Moyes, funnily enough, I think, for your favorite old former player, who is.
Yeah.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
My favorite... Les, I'm zagging here a bit, because I would imagine everyone would expect me to pick Yerry Mina, whom I absolutely love and adore. But my actual favorite former Everton player is Marouane Fellaini. And don't get me wrong, I think it's so funny when we talk about, you know, a personal favorite versus how you adjudge something to be, quote, the best, right? Like maybe the quote best player I've ever seen play for Everton in my time was probably, you could argue, maybe Leighton Baines or Lukaku at his peak. I still don't believe Lukaku's ever reached, you know, the zenith that he did, especially in that final year with us. But Fellaini, for a variety of reasons. I think Fellaini, one, because I have such distinct memories of his weird transfer that I'm still not convinced we actually got done in time, but they somehow let us sneak it through.
Yeah.
And this was in the pre-Twitter days when we acquired him. It was a standard Liège, right? Like, isn't that where he came from? And I kept refreshing. I don't know if it was like News Now or one of those sites where I could, you know, I was waiting for the news, and I was also had another tab open refreshing the club page at the time, because this is what we had to do before Twitter. And I felt like the deadline had passed, and then suddenly it was like we just squeezed in this deal for this guy I'd never heard of. And that was really the beginning for me, Les, of the notion of falling in love with a player that you've never seen play because you've been linked to him and now you just have to have him, right? But there was something about Fellaini coming in with the wild hair. He was big and tall and gangly, and what is this guy even supposed to be? And if you know me well enough, and this won't surprise anyone, I gravitate towards characters. You know, it's the reason why the Gravesons of the world, or even the Lee Carsleys of the world, like guys who look a little strange or have some unique characteristics, but also have kind of a, you know, a bit of edge to them. Fellaini was someone who, looked initially like a baby deer out there trying to figure out how to use his legs, and then eventually became so awesome in midfield. I don't know if I hope people can really remember when once he got to that point where he was really good, he was so good, Les. Yeah. Like, just in terms of being a physical presence, kind of learning to ride that line. Now, granted, he still got a shit ton of yellow cards, but learning to kind of utilize his physicality, but then also becoming a sneaky good passer, finding ways to get in the box and, you know, score the odd goal here or there. One of my favorite Everton moments, at least since I've been following them, and certainly my favorite Fellaini moment was, again, good at Goodison against United. I think it was 2012, wasn't it? Yeah. I think it was Fellaini's last. It was like the first game of the season.
It was on either Monday night as well, was it? I think.
Yeah, I couldn't remember. But it was the first game of the season. And we scored. You were probably at that game, Les, but we scored. And his celebration where he jumps in the air and he takes his thumb and he does that thing where he kind of like points to the back of his shirt, you know, like Fellaini. And he's just, because, man, when Fellaini scored or when Fellaini was part of something, that guy, you could tell he gave a shit. And at the end of the day, I think the way that I sometimes look at players, or the ways in which players become so personally endearing to me, is when they A, have a little bit of color or flair to them, but B, they also genuinely, every time they're out there, care.
Yeah.
That's so part of the ethos of Everton and being a supporter is loving players who really care. I tend to gravitate towards the more, the more oddball characters, clearly. That may be my MO. But I loved Fellaini, still love him. It didn't even begrudge him going to United. I think that overall he did it the right way. I think he even scored in his last game for us, you know, in the midst of that transfer getting negotiated. It was probably like a cup game or something like that. But no, Fellaini gave me a lot of good memories. And I felt like I had to pick him because those late years with Moyes before he got the job at United were actually, upon reflection, better than I remember them. And yeah. So I don't know, something about Fellaini really sticks out during that period that I really loved that team.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head about when we signed him. So I remember I was my job at the time was doing football statistics, so I was sat in the office just watching deadline day thinking nothing's going to happen here. And then I think it was about 11:05 on Sky Sports News, it broke that Everton had signed Marouane Fellaini from Standard Liège for 15 million. That was like, right, who is he? And how have we spent 15 million on a player? Because we just didn't spend that sort of money at all.
15 million, I know. I was like, whoa, where's this money coming from?
And then, as you say, when he came in, he just couldn't get to grips with it. I think I looked it up before and he got, I think it was 10 bookings in his first 17 games.
Yes, it felt like more somehow, but yes. Yeah.
And he actually had a meeting with Keith Hackett, who was England's chief referee, and vowed to improve his behaviour. Then he picked up 3 bookings in his next 16. But it was pretty turbulent those first few games because it was this player who'd come in. No one had any idea who he was, or certainly I didn't anyway. I don't think a lot of people didn't. Because as you say, it was pre-Twitter days, so you know there wasn't all the stats on every player flying around. And then he came in, we'd spent a record fee on him, and it looked like he's just ascending off, waiting to happen. But then, as you say, when he clicked, he was something else. And I think he was I think Everton played without a proper striker for about 2 seasons. And him and Tim Cahill were the 2 reasons we could do that.
Yeah,
because, you know, it was sort of, I think Moyes probably innovated the false nine, if I'm honest. But he was a big part of that, wasn't he? And, you know, as you say, he was a physical presence. And that United game you speak about, I think that's the best I've ever seen him play. He was unreal. Oh. That night.
And that night too, I think that's one thing I remember. And look, I'm the first to admit that I don't have the photographic memory that I wish that I had for every Everton game or every performance, but it's sort of like the way that when someone asks me like what I think of a movie or of, you know, an album these days, is that I'm probably far less analytical about every little detail, and it's more about the feeling that it gives me. And I just remember that night thinking very consciously that even before the goal, that he had just dominated. He was dominant. He looked incredible. There was a period where, you know, I think that was the thing back then with an Everton player, young player getting brought in like that, where you see them growing up in front of your eyes, and going from, as you pointed out, this player who did not know how to use his body at all and was just kind of all over the place, to then developing into a fantastical physical midfielder, but also someone who could, you know, cause trouble in the box. I always had a soft spot for guys who can cause mayhem in the box on set pieces, but also, yeah, a guy who could really pass the ball, really cover well. I just remember in that game thinking this was going to be a fun, special season. I don't think 2012 ended up like all that great. It was the year before, obviously, Martinez came in or whatever, but there was definitely there definitely was a lot of good pieces, were a lot of good pieces in that squad, and he was the one that I just had so much fondness for. And then, of course, all the wigs, everyone wearing the Fellaini wigs. I remember when he would, on occasion, Fellaini would actually pull his hair back and tie it into braids and stuff, and it was always jarring to me, because I was just like, it's like, whoa, who is this guy? What is he doing? And then he would let it go again. And I don't know. He's just so memorable. And there are a lot of guys that have come and gone at Everton that, you know, guys like you, Les, who will remember some random guy. I'll be like, oh, shit, I forgot that guy played for Everton. Fellaini is someone who is just, for how he looked, how he played, and the overall presence he had, just someone that you can't forget.
Yeah. He was class. And as you say, he sort of, although there was a lot of disquiet about his move, because I think it was when Moyes tried to lowball us when he was at Man United.
Oh, yeah, tried to take Baines and Fellaini at the same time. Moyes for that.
Yeah, and there was no real animosity when he moved. I think it was just like, okay, you're going to Man United, fair enough, who wouldn't? Which is why it surprised me when he scored against us in the semi-final. He celebrated like mad. I felt a little bit put out by that, because it was like, we've not even given you a hard time, but yeah. A brilliant player for Everton. Yeah. Another one of those who's very sort of typical of those Moyes teams. And yeah, cracking choice for former player. Can't argue with that at all. So we'll move on to you, which is, who is your favourite current player? Again, a solid choice, I think.
Well, the reason that this answer almost frankly shocks me, Les, is because there was definitely a period of time where I was ready to move on from him, and I thought, is this guy a little overrated? Is his value externally, the perception of his value, bigger externally than it is with us? What could we get for him? Can't you just, because I was definitely one of those who thought, if you've got a decent enough team in front of you, you can have a 7 out of 10 keeper and be fine in this league. And that's true. Little did I realize how horrible the outfield players that we would have at our disposal overall would be for these last several years. But Jordan Pickford is a guy who, very different apples and oranges, but when you talk about going from someone who was, constantly kind of sabotaging himself with his immaturity, to growing up over a period of time. Like, I always rejected this idea that, well, he's young, and people used to use that as an excuse for his maturity issues. And I thought, the guy's like in his mid 20s. Let's not use that as an excuse. But at some point, Les, and I don't know that this is scientific, but at whatever point he switched to the longer hair gelled up on top and combed back like a 1980s Wall Street tycoon trader. At that, whatever, I don't know, correlation is not causation and all of that, but he at some point, you know, post Newcastle meltdowns, what have you, just suddenly developed into this player who was consistent. And that's all I ever really wanted, was just the consistency, not making constant mistakes. Yet, no, he's not perfect. Yes, he, like pretty much every other keeper I've ever seen in this league, yells, you know, gets worked up during games and yells at the defenders, because the keeper is responsible, as you know, as for so much in regards to defensive communication and alignment on set pieces and all these things. But I can't believe that I had gone from wanting to sell Pickford at a high price to now feeling like he has really been the only constant over these last several years of, in terms of a player who was available consistently, a player who performed consistently. And let's be honest, Les, like, I can take any of these last, especially the last two seasons where we really flirted with relegation, and then this season, I can point to key players who kept us, you know, to me, you know, I know that Richarlison and Iwobi in Lampard's relegation season, you know, did so much to keep us up. Last season, it was the combination of, you know, you know, Dwight McNeil and a couple other players who really stepped up kind of late on, Decore, obviously.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when the manager finally relented after a 7-game winless streak and finally put Yerry Mina back in, those performances were key to us surviving. And, like, you know, you can point to players in those instances. The common denominator, though, for keeping Everton in this league is Jordan Pickford. It just is. And I don't know how many times he saved us from either, you know, kept us at least getting a point or keeping a win that we absolutely needed, with some of the most fantastical saves you've ever seen. And it, again, got his flaws just like any player does. But I think that we've probably gotten to the point where we don't really talk about Pickford much anymore in terms of the normal narrative discourse about Everton and players. It's a lot of talk about the midfield and a lot of talk about how long will we have Branthwaite, who is probably also my other favorite player, but yeah. I can't get as attached to him because I think he'll probably be gone soon. But, but, you know, there's constant talk about Calvert-Lewin and not scoring. But we almost have gotten to the point where we just don't even talk about Pickford anymore, because yes, he may have an odd mistake here or there, but overall, no one is saying, oh, well, you know, Pickford is the reason that we didn't do this or whatever. He's just pretty much, you know, to me, like a solid 7.5, 8 out of 10 every game. And we just don't even talk about it that much anymore. And I think because of that, he is, I can't believe I'm saying this about someone with a personality like Jordan Pickford, but he's sort of the calm in the storm of Everton over these last several years, isn't he? Like, it's wild to say that.
No, that's true, though, isn't it? I think a lot of us had kind of lost a bit of patience with him. You can't really talk about Jordan Pickford without talking about the Van Dijk tackle. It was such a big thing, I think, in his development as a player. Because I think at that point, he was erratic. So you say about, like, he threw a couple in at Newcastle a few times. He clearly loses his head when playing against them. Much in the same way most of us probably would if we were playing against Liverpool. But then that tackle, he got all the fallout after that from the press, from their fans, death threats, the lot.
Oh, yeah.
And then Ancelotti just kept him off the team, got him to see a psychologist. And I think that kind of made him as a player then, because he came back after about a month, 6 weeks out, I think it was. And he still had all those parts of his game where he'd constantly be yelling at the defence. He'd still look a little bit erratic in his head at times. But he's a goalkeeper and they're all a bit mad. I think they'd all definitely attest to that.
I forgot about that extended period he was out too.
Yeah.
It
really sort of it set him as a player then, because I don't know if maybe because he had, like, basically inflicted such a bad injury on a player, you know, it's gonna affect you, isn't it, mentally, if you've done that. Even if you can't stand him, it would affect you mentally, because you don't really want to go out and hurt anyone. So I think that really, and it was good that we had Ancelotti in charge, who, you know, was a big enough character to really take control of that situation and had the bottle to leave him out the squad at the time as well. So I think that really made him. And since he's been back, it's the old thing, isn't it? He plays brilliant for England, but he's crap for Everton. And it's like, well, How many times? How often do these people watch Everton? Because he's
they clearly don't watch.
Yeah, and I think the surprising thing for me is how long he's actually stuck around. Because he can't be in the trophies, can he?
I can't believe that I mean, look, let's be honest. The threshold for reliable media in your country is so low. Like, I always have viewed the. They're in negotiations for a new deal stories with a lot of skepticism because how many times have we seen that never come to fruition? Like Anthony Gordon was going to sign a new deal. Lukaku was going to sign a new deal. I mean, we could go down the list of all the guys who were going to sign new deals and then, you know, were sold or what have you. I just personally, you know, I'm one of those who understands that this concept that we have of loyalty, sometimes we try to, we really try to put on players of like, well, they should be as loyal as we are. Well, the players are never going to be as loyal because they're employees, right? Yeah. And that's, it's just different, you know? I get that there's a Seamus Coleman once every blue moon who just decides I'm never going anywhere else, right? But that's typically not the way it is. I thought with Pickford that if there was ever a time to quote, capitalize, get out now, you know, it might have been in these last, you know, season or two where
definitely,
you know, he had, no one would have blamed him for, he could have very easily said, hey, I, for the sake of my ambitions, but also frankly, because Everton are, it's such an unstable, you know, it's such an unstable, uncertain environment right now with the ownership, the constant changing of managers. He had every like viable excuse to say, I want to go challenge myself to be somewhere else or to do what have you. The fact that he stuck with Everton is something that I think people appreciate, Les, but I don't know if they really get why, you know, get how rare that is anymore for someone to say, yeah, I know I'm part of a bad team, but I'm the best player, but this is my place now. This is where I live. These are my people. I'm just comfortable here. Don't know why he's comfortable here, but he is. And so who am I to question that anymore? I also think that if we're being fair, so much of the discourse is very rightly about all the negativity around Everton. And look, I've known club employees who have even reached out to me and said, you know, it seems a little negative sometimes and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, when you do nothing but lose for most of a decade, you know, it's going to feel negative. It's, you know, it's
kind of does that to you, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I think one thing we probably underrate in the midst of all that is that when you talk to a lot of, you know, when you sometimes will see these little nuggets in these interviews, a lot of players will still talk about how, despite all the dysfunction, and this seemed to be even the case with during Mashiri's time and obviously before that, that players felt like it is still a family club. They're treated in such a way that they are overall, for all the vitriol that can be at Goodison, that overall it's a fairly, you know, it's a fairly supportive place as a player to be in. Now, obviously, I know we've had our, you know, confrontations outside Goodison incidents over the last couple seasons, but you know what I mean? Like overall, I think there's probably an element where players feel like this is still a comfortable, you know, a safe, warm bubble in some ways to be in. And I don't blame Pickford, you know, I think Pickford's one of those guys who looks at England as his best chance for trophies. And that's where he's just like, that's my focus for that. Obviously he'd love to win at Everton, but I just think that he looks at Everton as, this is my day job. I like being here. I'm comfortable here. I play well here. Well, I'm paid better than anyone else at the club. So why not? And maybe, he's got his reasons. And so I'm really happy about it, but he's been a constant. I've grown to love Jordan Pickford. And I frankly will be sad one day when he makes the decision to say he's going to go somewhere else, which I would only imagine would be in England. I can't imagine him leaving England, but who knows?
Yeah, same. I think just to pick up quickly before we move on about the England stuff, I think the fact that he's not moved and he's very, very rarely been linked with a move away is all the more remarkable when you consider that he goes England training every 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Now that, for players of clubs like Everton, that's like a sort of hotbed of getting tapped up to move to a bigger club. It happens all the time. So whether he just doesn't get tapped up or whether he just dismisses it straight away, I don't know. But I do think that makes it all the more remarkable. And theoretically, he really should have won the Euros with England, because for a keeper to make two saves in a penalty shootout and still not win it, that is really unlucky. That's like, that just doesn't happen, does it, normally? So,
And given his age and given his position, Les, he looks at play. I think that he's still got so many more chances still for England. I just don't see anyone taking his spot anytime soon. There's always talk of, you know, of someone who's coming to take that job from him, but it never really materializes, and for good reason.
Yeah, definitely. He's I think he probably is my favorite player at the minute. So like, I'm in full agreement about that. He's just, for me, I think it, before that it was Richarlison. He was like everything about that Everton team. I think it's Jordan Pickford now, and I think we would be lost without him.
Can I point out one other thing? One of my favorite live memories at Goodison is because of Jordan Pickford. We this was the game of, I think, back in 2018 against Palace at home. Pickford had a penalty save in that game. Calvert-Lewin had the game winner late on, and then you got a very rare breakout, like, you know, the very predictable Michael Keane with a perfect outlet pass to a sprinting Chinktosin who got the second goal in that game. It was just such a beautiful moment. That was actually the first Everton win I'd ever seen live. And so it's always sort of stuck with me, but Pickford was a big part of that memory for me.
Yeah, because that save was crucial. Was it 0-0 at the time or 1-0?
Yes, it was 0-0.
And their midfielder scored every penalty.
What was his name? I think he still plays at Palace, and I'm blanking on his name.
Yeah, exactly. I can't remember his name, but he was a good penalty taker.
He always scores for them. Yeah. I'll figure it. But yeah.
Pickford. Probably most memorable, though, for a jet-heeled Chinktosin, because I don't think we ever saw that before or since.
No. Hey, only a few guys can score a brace on a cold day in Stoke, and it's Chinktosin.
I was at that game. It was there was some great Chinktosin songs. Again, we didn't hear them before, we didn't hear them since, but it was what a time to be alive.
What a time.
Moving on then to your favourite loan player. So this player's actually been picked twice before as well. He's a big favorite. And before I go into that, I'll let you explain who it is.
Okay, it's Manuel Fernandez. And the reason it's Manuel Fernandez is because there are some players whose impact on my memory is definitely greater than the sum of their actual contributions at the club. Yeah. But you got to understand, like, when I first in, and remind me again, the year that he came on loan to Everton, Les, because I feel like you'll remember that. Was it like 06, 07?
Yeah, I've got it up here. It was 07. So he was at Benfica. Yeah. He was on loan at Portsmouth the season before. Then he came to us in 2007.
Okay. So you got to remember the context here for someone like me, who was not sadly was not following Everton in the glory days of the 80s. And so I didn't have that, like, you know, all these winning memories. But what I did have was, you know, starting in 04, watching Everton, watching lots of 1-0 grinded out games with, let's be honest, some relatively pedestrian attacking players, you know, Everton, like that 04-05 season, I've never seen a club will themselves in to a Champions League spot. And you never will again, by the way, with such a relatively small amount of overall talent. Now we had a great center half pairing on that, in that side, great goalkeeping. You know, the Weir Stubbs partnership was huge. Richard Wright? Who was the keeper that season in 04-05?
Nigel Martin.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Awesome that season. Yes. And then, you know, you had Arteta come in, whatever. But see, for the most part, it was a lot of grinding it out. And then suddenly in 07, I just remember, especially on the heels of the very disappointing James Beattie experience, where I thought, hey, we're getting a real striker in here, someone kind of exciting, and he ended up being nothing. Manuel Fernandez, for me, was like this first introduction of of this like young, pacey, kind of skilled, brash player who probably doesn't know any better that he's in England. It's supposed to be a lot harder and slower than this at times with playing with Everton, who just, and I think everyone probably remembers the same Manuel Fernandez goal, but
yeah.
The reason that I remember him and the reason that he was my favorite loan player, because that was the first loan player where I got into what ended up becoming, of course, the spiraling negative addiction, which is us getting a player on loan, them performing really well. And for a lot of those years, we would talk about trying to make it permanent and we weren't able to, you know, and he represented Fernandez for, again, he wasn't even that great overall, but it's just at the time he represented the promise that I feel like I've always been chasing with Everton, which is if we could just get this guy or just do this one thing and that, because we always feel like that next step for Everton in terms of progression. And I know that the concept of Everton progression is pretty foreign to much of our audience who may be of a certain young age who doesn't know what Everton actually like building on seasons looks like. But to me, he represented something that was greater, like I said, than the sum of him or his contributions. Manuel Fernandez was an exciting player who looked fast, who scored exciting goals when he scored, and was someone who I thought, this is what I want Everton to become, is to have this side that has this tough, resolute defensive ability, but also has these game-breaking dudes who, you know, can kind of add some color to the game and make it a little more exciting. And I think that, like I said, I think for me, some players, if you don't have a question about this, but it's the same reason that like I became obsessed with Andrei Yarmolenko, who never made it to Everton. I mean, I know we've done an 11s of players who we thought we were going to get and didn't. It was guys that for whatever reason you got enamored with, because it was always this idea that if we could just do this,
yeah,
if we could just get this, and I think people do this in life, you know, to their own peril, where they think, you know, if I could just get a little more money, if I could just do this, then everything would be better. And of course, it's never enough. And Fernandez, if we'd signed him permanently, would obviously have cratered out as a player with us. I know that. I know how it works. But I will say at the time, he captured my imagination. I know a lot of people will say Landon Donovan and probably expect an American to say that. And I did like seeing Landon Donovan come over and be successful. But for me, when Landon Donovan came to Everton, when he played well, it only made me feel the regret of why hadn't Landon Donovan been playing in Europe his whole career? He wasted way too much of his time in his career. And I'm sure he wouldn't characterize it this way in MLS, which is, you know, a third tier professional league. And when he would come to Everton and succeed, I'm like, why is he not wanting to make this a permanent thing? You know, like why would, you know, who wants to live in San Diego? You know, when you could be experiencing the winter magic of Merseyside. Like I don't know, but that's always where I was with that. But Fernandez is my choice, because Fernandez was my introduction to probably the concept of the false dawn that you sometimes get in feeling with certain players.
Yeah, and also a precursor of Everton getting done over by the league as well. So the reason he didn't sign for us was because of third party ownership.
Oh yeah. Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
But just
I've never heard of that concept until Manuel Fernandez, by the way.
Yeah. But the league had actually let United sign Tevez and Mascherano.
Yeah, and they were third party. I remember.
Despite them having third party ownership. So once again, it was one rule for them, one rule for another. But yeah, he was it was magic in that midfield for the time he came in. He had two loan spells at Everton, didn't he? The second one, not quite as successful.
Quite
but I think the thing I've said about him is that his career was sort of littered with 10, 20 game seasons. So I think had we signed him, he would have been enigmatic and it might have ruined everything. You know, he might not have had such fond memories. And just funny, I said before, like I think Dan picked Manny Fernandez and Gav Buckland did as well. And okay. Gav sort of said,
Gav. Oh, I love when I get one of Gav.
Yeah, you know, but Gav reckons we should have a rule whereby the lone player's got to be one who didn't sign permanently, because that changes the dynamic. But
yeah, no, it absolutely does. And you know, I think of the ones who I'm trying to think who more recently we got on loan. I mean, Gareth Barry, who ended up signing permanently, obviously the Andre Gomes thing, which, you know, it's always, loans are weird at Everton because it's always a very much a case of be careful what you wish for.
as is everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, then we will move on to the final category, which is blue, which is your favorite Evertonian, your favorite thing about Everton, just anything in relation to Everton that you love.
Okay. Well, if I'm going to do two things. One is going to be my favorite kind of, I'm just going to go fun here and go with my favorite, like, celebrity who is a blue, who's a supporter. And this one, Les, is courtesy of Les Roberts, because it's so crazy. As you get older, you sometimes are pleasantly surprised when you learn something new about something that you feel like you know quite a bit about, you know? And, as many of you know, for about 7 years, I hosted a radio show, a music show here locally, and called Turn of the Century, which is a podcast now that I'm just periodically, I think we do like once a month, but, you know, it's just for fun, whatever. So that's my shameless plug for Turn of the Century, which you can find on Spotify and Apple and wherever you get your podcast. But I would also say that, you know, being someone who's so engrossed in both Everton and in music, especially music of the 80s, 90s, especially also music from the UK broadly, but especially in that 80s period, one of my favorite bands for quite a while is The Cult. And I cannot believe I did not somehow know that Ian Astbury, the lead singer, who with one of the most distinctive voices that worked both in like, kind of he worked great in both post-punk, new wave, and just straight rock. Like that guy could be the lead singer of AC/DC and could be the lead singer of you know, name your English post-punk band of the early 80s. Like he has such an incredible voice. I cannot believe I didn't know Ian Astbury was an Everton supporter. And I think back to, like, you know, the zenith of The Cult are, you know, for me, they're two kind of magnum opus albums, 1985's Electric, which is my favorite. It's a masterpiece. Or no, not 1985's Love, which is a masterpiece, and 1987's Electric. And I thought, how great was it for Ian Astbury at the time to be recording like legendary music and also supporting an Everton side winning titles at the time? Like, it must have just been like, what a time to be alive for him at the time. I just thought, but and look, I'm going to point this out real quick, Liz, as I step away from the camera. For those who don't know what Ian Astbury looks like, this is the cover of The Cult, Electric. All right. Look at that. Like, is it a coonskin cap? Is it it's some sort of dead animal that is on top of his head. And you can't get away with that except in the 80s, I suppose, to a certain degree. But he's a character, and I love that he is an Everton fan. And if somehow Ian Astbury, who knows, but if he somehow hears this, I just want to tell Ian Astbury that I'm a big, huge fan of your music. And I love that you love Everton, and I also am sorry that you love Everton.
I was, you know what? I love the fact that you didn't know he supported Everton.
And I didn't know that.
Yeah, but when you said, "Oh my god, he does," I was just like, "Yeah, you." I don't know if you like the music or dislike it a bit more now, but it's so good to know, isn't it?
No, it's just one of those things where, like, it doesn't make a difference. Like, look, I like Echo and the Bunnymen, and they're Reds. I mean, I can separate that kind of stuff. Like, I'm never gonna, you know, like, you can't. If you're too rigid about the whole, you know, blue and red line on Merseyside, then you couldn't listen to the Beatles and be happy, you know, because you'd have to be like, you know, oh, well, I only like the McCartney songs or stupid shit like that. Like, I'm not like that. But the fact that he is, and he's as a lover of hard rock, punk rock, new wave, post-punk, the Cult are legends. And so for Ian Astbury to be an Evertonian is pretty awesome.
Yeah, and since you put me on it, I have been battering those two albums.
Oh, just amazing. Know, can't beat it. Can't good beat stuff. It. And then the other thing I was going to say about my favorite Everton thing is, you know, in broad strokes, I don't want to rehash the same old stuff. But look, I say all the time that the proof of my love for Everton is that they've been this pretty bad for the vast majority of the time that I've supported them. And yet, let's put it this way, association with a fandom for pretty much anything has come close to enriching my life the way that this has. You know, for all the talk of needing kind of a mental break from doing the Everton podcasting bit with the Blue Room, this season, you know, the friends that I've made, and the brotherhood really, and the experiences that I've had, I've now been over four times. I feel at home when I get to Liverpool, I feel like I'm in my second home. I really do. And it's hard to articulate. I mean, I'm going to be back there in April. I was saying before for the Burnley game, but I'm there for one of my closest friends' weddings. You know, like I wouldn't have had these relationships without Everton. Shout out Mike Diasha, by the way. I wouldn't have had these friendships without the common denominator of Everton. And you know, maybe you could argue that Everton just kind of happens to be the thing that brought us together. I don't really know, but the bottom line is that without Everton, I wouldn't have such great friendships, relationships, and a connection to a city that matters to me so much. And I'm to the point where whenever I encounter people in my professional life or my personal life who talk about wanting to go to England, I always say to them, do yourself a favor and don't just go to London like every, you know, because I think that all of our cultural perceptions, primarily in America, of England are largely built around a Southern point of view and a London point of view. And I always say to them, you know, Liverpool is one of the most incredible cities in the world. It is the north of England is such a culturally different place and a rich place and a wonderful place. And you're not going to find better people in the world than you're going to find in Liverpool. And so that's the thing that I still love Everton for and will always love Everton for, is that Everton gave me friends. Everton gave me a new city that I love and a second home and everything that's come with it. And I will always be eternally grateful for that.
And that is a lovely way to wrap things up. Can't say fairer than that. Thanks for all these choices, Rob. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. Just want to plug the Turn of the Century podcast again.
Oh, yeah, sure. If you were ever a fan of the Turn of the Century music show, I know a lot of those episodes are available for streaming. My wife and I now do about like once a month. We're just having fun. We're not really trying to make a living out of this, thank God. Cause as Les and I both know, you can't really make a living out of podcasting at this level, but we talk the 80s, 90s and 2000s music, movies, film, television, and we just enjoy shooting the shit. And so if you are of the demographic of Les and I, we, you know, or around that time, I sometimes refer to us as the greatest generation. I don't know if anyone's ever come up with that term before, but clearly people who were born in the late 70s to early 80s are part of that generation. I think you'll like the podcast, but Les, really appreciate you having me on, and always great talking to one of my true blue room brothers. So great.
Cheers, Rob. Right back at you, man. We will be back. I'm not sure who's on next, but we'll be back with someone else for another Old New Borough Blue. We will catch you next time. Sports Social Podcast Network.